to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. It's been so busy here at Base Beauty. Busy in the best way, but this is one of my favorite pieces of our day, getting to take time together and talk to our Where Brains Meet Beauty family and share these stories. How are you? How are things in your world at Base Beauty?
Well, busy, like you said, in the best way. I recently just came back from a trip in San Francisco to work with the team on a really big event, which I'll tell you about in a second. But what was really cool is at the same time the team was in San Francisco, we had other team members in New York leading a Clairol big event. So it's just so fun and like pinch me moments when I see the impact of our work, and like then it's multiplied. It's very, very cool.
Yes, I love that. And I love getting to hear recaps from different people on different teams. Like there, you know, the Clairol thing that was very socially focused and Kayali was awareness. And it's really cool to just hear the planning that goes into this from so many different teams and see it all come to life. I love it. Tell me more about the San Francisco event.
Okay, we went to San Francisco for our client Kayali. So Kayali is founded and led by Mona Katan, who's a really fascinating woman, major influencer herself, and she developed this gorgeous fragrance company, prestige fragrance brand. So we got to be with Mona, her team, her global team from Dubai, the US team, and the whole program was to pre-launch their newest fragrance, which is called Flor Majesty Rose Royale. So like a true, really lush floral scent, which is a little bit of a departure. They're usually known for their gourmands. So this is a really exciting launch for them. And just watching our team just make magic happen every day is so cool. Like I'm there to show support, but they're the ones doing the work. And it was really, really fun to watch it all roll out.
Yes, it's such a really amazing client team to work with. And the way our team rolled out the news of this new product launch was so special. It was, you know, creating quality time for Mona with top beauty editors, top influencers. It felt really intimate and personal. And I'm sure these brand fans loved hearing the news first as well.
Well, the theme was opulence. We gave it to them. Everybody was met with like a beautiful venue. All the flowers that are keynotes and the fragrances were all over the venue. It was gorgeous. But what our team was doing was 3 days of amazing client management, VIP hosting, and making sure the theme of the launch came to life. And we really created an incredible sensory experience for the brand and the launch. And, you know, Mona's vision is very strong. So it was an incredible brief to our team. And we were able to watch the magic happen as content rolled out all over social.
Yeah, it was amazing. I got to scout the location and be in San Francisco before the event. And we toured the Fairmont Hotel. This was one of the options that we provided to the client to see how this could bring the opulence theme to life. And it is amazing for anyone who is planning a really lavish trip or has any reason to be there. The penthouse is incredible. So I think, you know, it was really special for these invitees to be there, you know, see these really panoramic views of San Francisco, the lush floral arrangements. We worked with an amazing floral team there. And it was, yeah, it was just such a great way to see the fragrance come to life through this moment.
So each day, Mona had 45 minutes one-on-one with each guest. So 45 minutes with each editor, 45 minutes with each influencer, which was so incredible. Really beautiful quality time together. And we ended each day with a scent lab experience that Mona and her team led, teaching the influencers and editors about how she builds fragrances and how she layers fragrances. And then we finished off each night with a beautiful VIP dinner. What an incredible way to develop connection and nurture relationships. It was so intimate, so special. And everybody had such a good time.
Yeah, the opportunity for that deep education and the connection with Mona is really so unique to a brand like this that has this awesome team of people who can be there and this Mona who can be there part of the conversation. So I loved watching it come to life, loved being part of the planning. We are working on a lot of other really fun and interesting things. I have something for another client who you'll actually learn more about today that is under wraps for a bit, but more to come on that soon. For now, Jodi, tell us who this client is and how this person is involved in today's conversation with another guest.
Well, I think the wink wink you're giving us is for Dawn Hilarczyk. She's a Borghese COO. Very smart woman, amazing to work with. So Eleni and the team are working on a big, I'll just say launch. I guess I'll just say nothing because it's like under wraps for now, whatever. Something cool is coming that she'll share with you soon enough. But Dawn is a brand builder with 20 plus years of experience in beauty, health, and wellness. She is so talented at scaling brands and growing brands. I love talking to her and learning from her. So this beautiful legacy brand, Borghese, is now under her vision, and you can just see like sparks flying over there. It's incredible to work with them. So Dawn's a guest on our show today. She's also a client, and she's also someone I learn from all the time. And she's joined by Vimla Black Gupta. So she is the founder of Ourself. She's also had this incredible career, many C-suite roles at very large beauty companies. But she co-founded this biotech skincare company a few years ago, very fascinating company. She's since decided to move on from Ourself. She hasn't totally told us what she's planning next. We get some peeks at it in this episode. So if you want to track her career, you're going to have to listen closely for some of the little Easter eggs she leaves us. But, you know, Vimla and Dawn are two fascinating, brilliant women, and we had such an incredible conversation.
This was one of our episode recordings as part of our recent listening party, and it was one of my favorite of the day. The chemistry between these two guests was dynamic. It was amazing to hear from them, to learn from them. You would have thought they've known each other for years, the three of you, honestly. It's really a great conversation and a great episode, so definitely listen in. We also have a really fun foodie game for anyone who is local to New York City and wants to learn more about great spots, so you can hear some more about fun places to visit there as well.
What a joy it is for me to be able to spend time with women like Vimla and Dawn. So smart, so talented. And like you said, the chemistry between these two women, you would have thought that they've worked together for years. In fact, they met only because of the show. So hopefully the power connection continues and they develop a longer relationship in this industry. But the episode's great. It is fun from start to finish. Great insights and learnings along the way.
Absolutely. Let's get to more of it in episode 279 with Dawn Hilarczyk and Vimla Black Gupta.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. I'm sitting with Dawn Hilarczyk, COO Borghese, and Vimla Black Gupta. We need to talk about a better title, but you're the former CEO of Ourself.
Yes, correct.
And you're
co-founder and former CEO of Ourself.
And are you going to tell us what's next for you today or no?
I'll tell you what I'm up to, but I can't tell you.
But we're going to start with who makes your boots.
How do I say Gianvito
Rossi?
Thank you.
Okay. They are adorable.
Thank you.
Okay, this is a career journey show. Your journeys like have threaded next to each other, almost like shoelaces. But we're going to go back in time. And Vimla, you're going to tell us, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So my superlative in high school, you know, what they write in when there used to be yearbooks, I don't know if those still exist, was everyone said I was going to own a spa. I was one of those crazy psycho workout people, like from birth. And I always, before wellness was a word, I was like, this, whatever this is, I want to do. And so I guess, you know, yeah, I was like, I'm going to own a spa.
And Dawn?
I think I was going to be a vet. I loved being, you know, taking care of animals. I think my daughter's going to be a vet, so that'll work out well. But I thought a vet or... I did want to be a fly girl.
Yeah. What's a fly girl?
In Living Color. Oh, so that just ages everyone here.
Oh, you're so young.
Yeah. Well, I was a little too old to be a fly girl, but.
I think, wasn't Jennifer Lopez a fly girl?
I didn't know who she was back. Obviously, we didn't know who she was back then, but yeah. I always thought like roller skating.
Yeah.
And fly girl.
Okay, so this brings me to, we just mentioned J-Lo. Is Janet Jackson someone that was really important to you as a child?
Clearly. Yes, of course. That's like laughable to me. Of course. I mean, she was my everything.
She was your everything.
Of course.
And you wanted to be Janet Jackson.
Absolutely. Who didn't? Love Will Never Do, that video. Like, forget it. Absolutely.
Well, you know, your careers have taken other paths. You are not a veterinarian, right? You are not Janet Jackson. You have really incredible stories. That's what we're going to dig into today. We're going to talk about career journey and leadership. But I want to start with a topic that I find really fascinating is like how we define success, right? Everybody will define it differently, but I want to go back to like the 22, 23, 24 year old versions of yourselves. And what did you think success meant then? And we can start with you, Vimla.
When I was young, that was a long time ago, success to me really meant doing what I loved. And I knew that back then. The problem is I didn't know what I loved to do. But I knew that, gosh, I had so much energy. I was like, if I could channel this into something that I really love, and can imagine as my job, that would be incredible. That would be success. But it was really hard being honest with myself about what I loved.
We're going to come back to that. Dawn, how did you define it?
So when I was in my 20s, I was a makeup artist in New York. And this is before social media. So print and fashion week were important. I think for me, success was walking through the doors of opportunity and never looking back. And I think that's what defined my success now. So any opportunity that I thought was great, I would walk through that door because I always felt like you could just walk back out. I think that started to define me. So I always took risks.
Okay, these are very mature responses.
Probably not what my husband would like me to say, but I always took risks.
Okay, very mature responses for your 23-year-old self to be thinking about when I was thinking about, like, can I buy a bottle of champagne at the club? Okay.
Well, I did have an Express charge card, so that's not very...
An Express card? I worked at Express.
Yeah, it wasn't, that wasn't very responsible.
But. I learned how to fold sweaters at Express.
Sorry.
Express is still in business.
It is?
Yeah, it's making a comeback, actually.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, vintage.
Okay, so I want to go back to what you said, like this incredibly mature thought about like what brings me joy, what makes me happy. What did you think it would be, right, when you were like running through your head trying to understand it? What were the options?
I actually think I knew, but I knew that I could never find that, right? I knew that I loved beauty. I knew that I loved wellness, and that wasn't even a term back then. I loved makeup. I loved skincare. But I didn't know that that could actually be a job. And I didn't know there was this thing called marketing. So what, but I knew if I could do that or do something that I loved, that I would be, it would be amazing and that I would be successful at it. Instead, what I did is I worked for Booz Allen and Hamilton. I was a consultant in the I grew up in Washington, D.C., and we were consulting for the D.C. government, actually. So it was quite joyless for me, you know, doing consulting. I was doing a lot of HR consulting, actually, doing a lot of work for the FAA, the FMHA. And it was great learning for me, but it was not something that I loved. And therefore, I knew I would never be successful at it. But it was a means to an end, similar to what you're saying. I mean, I went in that door. Obviously, it opened up a lot of opportunities for me, but it was quite joyless. And I knew if it could be joyful, I would be successful at it and would, you know, be happy. But I knew that's not what I wanted to do. But I wasn't mature enough to realize that I actually sort of did know what I loved, and if I could make it happen, who knew at that time that beauty could actually, you know, beauty since then has just become this unbelievable category, and wellness was not even a thing. So it was just, you know, different time.
What doors were you walking through?
Well, I think when I was at, so I worked for a lady named Trish McAvoy. She moved me from Alabama to New York, and I became a makeup artist for her at her biggest store, was 59th Street. Someone walked in the door at 59th Street and said, do you want to come to Barney's? I've even heard of Barney's, you know, only New Yorkers and like the elite know Barney's, right? So I said, yes, I'll take it. So I went to Chanel. This was at the time Sex and the City was being filmed there. It was the most amazing opportunity. Then someone walked into Barney's and said, we got your name from someone. Would you like to come to Estee Lauder? And I said, sure. I always said, sure. I was like, yeah, well, what do I have to lose? Nothing. So it was a game changer because that door from... This was 2001, August 21st, 2001. That game changed me because I said yes to Estee Lauder and then 9/11 happened. And Estee Lauder was a pivotal in my career. And it's a game changer. I think Estee Lauder is one of the best companies to train you of who you are. And if I didn't say yes, I would have been out of business. And I was buying a house. I was engaged. We bought a house. I would have been out of business, you know? So that, yes, was a game changer, I think.
And this was a big journey, Alabama to New York City.
Yeah, so I went to Auburn. I met my husband there. He's from New Jersey. He played soccer. I met him on my first day. I was like, ooh.
Oh, wait, we're hearing, this is our second story of finding romance in college today.
He had a green goatee and eyebrow ring, and I was like, oh, he's cute. I didn't really love the Southern boys because my father's military. We lived all over the world, and I just was like, oh, they're so close-minded. And, and so we met, and then we decided that we were going to graduate. He's like, I cannot live in the South. Like, just going to let you know, like, it doesn't work for me. And I said, okay, well, Trish was like, do you want to come to 59th Street and work for me there? And I said, sure. And that was it. So we moved and bought a house. So we bought a house in 2000, and we're engaged, and we're getting married. And then I went to Estee Lauder. And that's a big change, yeah. I actually should say thank you to them more often.
Yes.
So you left this consulting world. You had to say yes to something to get out of it. What is it that you said yes to?
So I always knew I wanted to go. So I learned about what this thing marketing was. And I also learned that I had to go to business school and I had to go to a really good business school to do what I wanted to do and to be successful at it. And so I was like, I have to get another job to get me more experience where mm-hmm. I can be a little bit more engaged. So I actually worked for Nations Bank, which is now Bank of America. And Nations Bank at the time, was based out of Charlotte, was in the business of buying banks. And I got to be on the change management team, which basically meant when you bought a bank, you were the team that swooped in and put everything together. And I'm going to really date myself. What I was in charge was all the ATMs.
Wow.
So when we bought a bank, it was redesigning what the ATM interface could look like. And I did not realize at that moment, the ATMs were so new, mm-hmm. and that was true consumer interface. And so really understanding sort of how the consumer might navigate it, mm-hmm. what it would say about the bank in terms of what that interaction looks like. I learned a lot about marketing there. And while I wasn't like a technical person, it was really about translating what the technical had to do in a way that was really consumer friendly. And I was like, whatever this is, I really like it. And imagine if I was doing this with like lipstick or skincare, this could be supremely interesting. But I basically did my time there to learn as much about business. I didn't know anything about the banking industry, but Nations Bank at the time, based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, I went to Duke, so I knew sort of the North Carolina world, but you know, it was in the business of buying banks, and it was super fast moving, and I learned as much as I possibly could to basically get into the best business school I could, which was Kellogg at Northwestern, which was a phenomenal experience. It was really phenomenal, and I learned so much about this thing that I knew was in me. I just never knew there was this thing called marketing, and I didn't understand. I really didn't even know the word consumer or consumer insights or marketing. I didn't know any of these terms, and so to be able to more academically understood what I intrinsically knew, and then the possibility of being able to apply it and then make money doing it was just an unbelievable opportunity for me.
Well, I want to join you on the going back in time path, because my first job out of college was at BBDO. The client I was assigned to was Visa, and the project I worked on was new at the time. It was called Visa Check Card. Right, this is how old I am. This was at a time where the world was revolutionized, because instead of standing at the grocery store and writing a check with a pen at checkout, I know the young people are like, what are you talking about? Now you could put this card that looked like a credit card in the machine. And this was revolutionary and changed, obviously, how we move through the world now, right? And you know, it's a precursor to being able to Apple Pay.
Yeah.
And when I think about how long ago that was, and then it makes me think about how long I've actually been working, it's nuts. Because this world of like paying with a paper check,
right,
that was our consumer insight. Oh. People don't want to wait online longer than they have to at the food store waiting for someone to write their check. Look at how much we've advanced. It's actually like wild to me.
My husband and I, we didn't have no money in college. We used to write checks to McDonald's and like CC's Pizza. And my kids are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah. They're like, where'd it go? I go, in the bank where you put your money. So the invisible debit card now, or the Venmo, right? Where it's like invisible.
We're going to flip ahead many, many years because you're both involved in like the startup world and mm-hmm. beauty, right?
Yes.
So you with, I want to pronounce right, Noble Panacea.
Yes.
And you with Ourself. So this is so different than any of the companies that you've worked at, right? This is like a completely new world. So talking about moving through doors, let's start with you, Dawn. Why go to a place that was unknown and untested when you were in this world that was obviously proven?
Well, luckily before that, I had a stint in startups before. I was in a contract manufacturing opportunity in East Haven called Milbar. And I learned a little bit about that and contract manufacturing operations. And then I went to a small company that was doing private equity. They were buying from Shiseido. And so when a recruiter had called me, they said, they have this company, we can't tell you the name. I was just with friends last night, they were just joking about this whole story. They're like, it was a fake skincare name. There's a Nobel laureate named Sir Fraser Stoddard at Northwestern University in Chicago. They're going to start a skincare. I was like, yeah, right. I was like, there's no way. I know everyone in the industry that's skin. Like, there's no way this guy's starting it. And they kept on calling, and I met with the board, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. My husband's a biologist, so to work with a Nobel laureate chemist is groundbreaking. And to have proprietary technology to move through, I said, okay. So fifth employee in the company, we didn't even have a Bank of America account. We didn't have a warehouse. Like, we didn't have anything. And we built the company for 5 years. We launched at the Met in New York City. It took us about 12 months from concept to consumer to launch. I learned a lot in 5 years, you know, learned a lot about starting a company and recruiting people to work for you. And then COVID happens and we didn't lay off one person. We kept everyone and investors. And you know, there's a lot that you learn when you start a company from scratch. You know, it's pretty humbling. And also I learned a lot about myself, that I am a game changer and an innovator and I can do anything. Because you have to. It's like do or die. You have to survive. And people are relying on you so they can pay their bills because you've recruited them. And it's a game changer, I think.
So you also attach yourself to this incredible science story.
Absolutely. Well, so by way of background, I grew up in marketing at some of the best companies in the world that were always about innovation, right? Gillette, mm-hmm. Procter & Gamble. And then I, too, went to same alma mater, Estee Lauder, I bowed down to them, learned so much. Yep. From them, and I thank them every day. But what I learned being at those big companies was that, you know, I love innovation, and I do feel like I can see into the future because I am the consumer, and I'm so obsessed with wellness. I'm so obsessed with beauty. And oftentimes when you're in a large organization and you're so excited to do innovation, it just takes time, right? It's the nature of the organization. And when I was at Gillette, actually, I had my own handbag company. It was called Bag Envy. I started when the internet started. You can quote that. When the internet started, I was like, I'm not kidding. I was like, I'm going to start a company about handbags.
Handbags?
Yeah. And I didn't know a single handbag designer, but I sourced over 1,000 different handbags. My partner was at Yahoo. She was in New York. I was in Boston. And we started this thing called Bag Envy. We stored the inventory under my desk at work at Gillette. And my managers let me do it because they're like, oh, the internet's going to go away. It's a nice hobby for her. She's so creative and innovative. This is all true. And we went from, you know, overnight we were getting like thousands of orders, and it's because InStyle magazine had voted us the best new website in the country.
Oh my goodness.
We had no marketing budget. But I got the bug there, and we did that for 5 years. Did that for 5 years while being an executive.
Wait, is this like 1999, 1997?
Yeah,
when is it?
Yeah.
Like 96, 97?
Yeah, 96, 97, yeah. No, 90, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, fast forward, I had that experience. And after leaving Lauder, I was, you know, I sort of had put beauty to rest. And I was like, I could only go back into beauty if it was going to be something truly innovative. And similar to you, I had a VC called me saying, listen, we've got these founders who are incredible. They were the founders of Elastin Skincare and SkinMedica. Really some of the first doctor dispensed skincare brands, and they've got this new technology, and it's not really about ingredients per se, but it's about a delivery system. Mm-hmm. It's a delivery system that actually can get down deep into the skin, really where needles can go. And I was like, you had me at hello, because this was exactly what I was looking for. But they didn't have a brand, they didn't have products, they had nothing. This was during COVID, and from scratch had to build a team, create a brand, create products, and go. And it was the most exhilarating experience of my life, because many people see a white piece of paper and get scared. I see a white piece of paper and it's electrifying for me. But it's only electrifying if I actually know that I have a product that's going to perform and that I've got a consumer insight and a brand that really can connect with both the heart and mind of a consumer. And that sounds so basic, but having those two things, if you go through every brand that's out there right now and you really ask yourself, are they performing and are they connecting? Mm-hmm. That's really what the secret sauce is, but it's really freaking hard to do. Yeah. And when you're a startup and you know, in your middle of a pandemic and you know, it's so hard to get resources. I didn't meet my co-founders until 8 months after we had started. Mm-hmm. But I learned so much. I'm going to quote you. I learned so much about myself and what I can do. I also know the limitations to what I can do. Because one of to go into a startup, you have to be crazy. To be a founder, you have to be nuts.
Yes.
Because you have to believe that you can. You have to literally be nuts, because it is quite literally impossible. Mm-hmm. And you have to check yourself every now and then. Like, just because I think I can do it doesn't mean I should.
Or you have to be – it's humbling when you're like, why doesn't the press want to cover us? Do they understand we're a game changer? Right. This is so different. Right. And they're like, no, we're okay. And you're like, huh? How do you not understand us?
Yeah. Right. But it's that lunacy
that
gets people to listen to you. It's a lunacy that gets you into a retailer, and that conviction. Mm-hmm. And it is a fire in when you believe.
Yeah.
Now, I can't fake it, right? Like, I only can do things that I really believe in. And when you believe and I'm passionate about it, it will propel you to do crazy things.
Yeah.
I want to go back in time with you again in our parallel paths of our career. We were both in the debit card game early on. I was spending my time when you were making Bag Envy, working at a startup website in Flatiron. My job was to go to nightclubs and hang out with like the bouncers and the club promoters and the DJs and then write about it the next day for scenetrack.com.
Oh.
And I was, you know, this is a very good job for a 21, 22-year-old. And this is a website that went nowhere and made no money. And sometimes we didn't get paid. But I was part of this dot-com boom that was unlike anything else. And all my friends were working at startups and we were having parties every day. These startups were, you know, the big parties, like that really happened. And then I left. But what fun to be early on in this adventure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what is the thing that you've learned the most about yourself, not about work, right? But about yourself as you've evolved in your career, right? We're all adults now. Mm-hmm. And I think that work is the greatest conduit to learning about myself inside, like, you know, how my heart and my head connect. So what are some of the things that you learned about yourself that, you know, either surprised you or delighted you? And we can start with you, Dawn.
So I have three things I live by. The first one I learned was the emotional piggy bank theory, that I really feel that you cannot withdraw from a relationship unless you've deposited. So when I think about teams, employees, friends, relationships, I try to really deposit before I need to withdraw. Because in startups, and you know this from being a co-founder, is that you have to really ask a lot of your team or your investor. So you need to deposit before you need to ask for the withdrawal. That's one.
Wait, go back to it. Say the first sentence again about the piggy bank.
It's the emotional piggy bank. Yeah. So I really try to deposit a lot with my teams, get to know them, support them, the investors, get trust built with this before I start withdrawing. Because mm-hmm. when it gets tough, you're going to need to withdraw. And if you haven't deposited enough, you'll over-withdraw. So that's my first one. Okay. My second theory is, and people that know me know that I'm big into relationships and culture. My second one I learned most recently around this time of Noble and COVID was I do an audit, a relationship audit. I talk a lot about relationship audits. It's my personal life, my professional life, and even with my team. If I reevaluate this relationship to see what the value is for myself, and then I will remove them. And I've done that, unfortunately, with even family members and friends, but I try to teach relationship audit to my daughter as well, because life is too short to always be in this state of chaos. So I do a relationship audit. And I think the third one that for me is what I've learned a lot about myself is I pretty much can do anything I put my mind to. I really feel like I have Teflon. And you know, being a founder, I wake up every day with a reset. I literally wake up like it's a brand new day today and I'm all excited every day, which can be a little annoying for my team. It's extremely annoying for my husband. But every day I'm like exhilarated and I get excited. I was just telling the team this yesterday, like, we're a Borghese. We're small. Like, we've been off the radar for a long time. If we get one publication and no one knows it, just one just recently, I was like, oh my gosh, we got this amazing publication. Everyone's like, yes. No one knows the publication. I'm so happy. I'm so excited. Or influencer that maybe everyone doesn't know posts about our product. It makes me so happy. I really do find joy in the little moments. But you have to. Otherwise, you're just exhausted.
So. Okay. I want to hear your responses, and we are going to get a lesson in the relationship audit. We're going to come back to that. Okay. So what have you learned about yourself?
Those were so good.
Yeah, they are really good.
I'm just not going to be nearly as articulate.
No, yes, you are. You know. Gosh.
I'm not. Okay. So what have I learned about myself and what has surprised me?
Yeah.
What I've learned about myself and what has both surprised me is I should trust my gut. And I say that to particularly women, is that we have this power. We are very good at suppressing it. There is something inside of you that is your weather vane, and it tells you, you know, which way the wind is blowing. And I would say more often than not, especially when we're younger, but even when you're older, you ignore it. And what I've really surprised myself is realizing that it's usually right and learning that I need to better articulate it. Right. So it's, I think oftentimes when I'm trying to trust my gut and I articulate it poorly because I'm not truly believing in it, then, you know, whatever I thought should happen just doesn't. And that's my fault. Right. It's trusting myself, but better articulating what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And I say that to everyone. I say that to my 9-year-old daughter. I'm like, what is your first thought? That is the right thought. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay that it's your first thought. That first thought was what you felt inside. And so being able to express it and rally around it and championing that gut. super important. The second thing that I've learned is the power of connection. It's both connecting with yourself and connecting with others. Those to me are the two most important things in life, period, full stop. First and foremost is connecting with yourself, and what does that look like? What does that need to look like, right? What is the setup you need? You know, where's the best place for you to process information? Where's the best place for you to sort of to think, to be able to look at your gut? So how do you connect with yourself? What are the ways in which you do it? And there's, you know, people have got all these obvious ways like meditation. That's not me, right? Like connecting with myself actually, for me, connecting with myself happens through in a run. Mm-hmm. And it actually happens on a run on a windy day. Because it's like I literally, to get through the wind, I have to literally dig deep inside. And I know that sounds really corny, but it's true. Mm-hmm. That's how I connect with myself. It's like on a windy day. But connecting with others is also important. And I think this goes back to you, your comment about, you know, and this is related to the importance of time. I need to connect. I like connecting with people where it's worth my time. Yep. Not that that's a transaction, like it's because they're going to get me something, mm-hmm. but they make me feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. They're giving me what I need. And whether it's the empathy or compassion or just listening or just making me, like, you know, pee in my pants from laughing, that connecting with other people is super critical. And that's both in personally and professionally. It's just been a big learning for me.
I believe that women are magical beings. I really believe this. Like, we have so much power in our, like, coming out of our fingertips. And you're right, we're taught to maybe push that down or not feel it and not recognize and not honor it, but we really are magical. Mm-hmm. And when you say, like, I can do anything, like, it's true. We really can do anything. It's just we have to remind ourselves this and speak to ourselves in our head when we're having thoughts that are telling us otherwise.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, there's people all around us who are literally pushing boulders up hills on a daily basis. And it's only because they believe. They don't have extra things, you know, extra skills or muscles. They have the same skeleton, you know, and basic stuff we have. It's just that they believe. So I want to just go back to this audit because I'm sure people are going to take notes on it. How does this actually come to life? Is this a mental thing? Is there a list?
No, it's both. So relationship audit, it's a lot of work. I didn't just, like, profoundly wake up one day. I have a really good life coach. Her name's Carrie Preston. She's actually the vice president of people at ELF now. She's been my life mentor for a long time. So when I went to Shiseido, she went there. When I went to La Paris, she went there. When I went to Revive and Noble, she went to all these places to help my teams too. And she always talks about you need to remove gremlins. And I didn't really know what that meant, the gremlins in my head. And so when she finally learned how to remove gremlins, I started looking around going, oh, I'm allowing these people to feed the gremlins in my head. So relationship audit is, I really do it every 5 years. I look around and I think, okay. And I say this to my kids when they're little. If they make you cry more than they make you laugh, peace out. That's easier said than done when you're in middle school and high school. More for females than males, right? Males are like, punch each other. Okay, we're fine. Girls are like, and now social media doesn't help. But I started looking around going, when I'm with that person, do I worry they're talking about me behind my back? They're sarcastic. Do they not have my best interest? Or do I feel safe around them? Then they're out. So I removed a family member recently, 5 years ago, for 3 years. And that family member came back and apologized, which I was shocked. I removed a lot of good friends. And when you raise kids, you know, there's like a circle, like you're friends with them because of sports, and then you're friends with them because you're neighbors. And you start looking around going, I really wouldn't like you if I was not in this situation. So I remove them. And I've removed a lot of colleagues and jobs too. Like if you look at my LinkedIn, it's like, oh, she's moving around. No, I haven't moved around because of me. I've moved around because I won't tolerate bad culture. Mm-hmm. So while the company has been good to me, or the CEO, the founder has been amazing to me, I don't like bad culture. Therefore, I will remove myself. And that's a relationship audit. So it's not always so easy. And it is a risk. Oh, it's a big risk. But I'm at this point too old. I don't want to deal with it anymore. You know, same thing what you said. Connection.
So let's just, I want to go one more step into this process. There's detaching, like a few, and then there's detaching with love or kindness.
I always detach with kindness.
What does that look
really
like?
I'm not really good. When I walk away going, why didn't I say that? But I don't really have the courage. I talk like I do, but I'm like an M&M. Like, you hold me long enough, I will melt. But on the outside, I have this coating. So I just start to kind of remove myself slowly. Mm-hmm. And then I start to just audit slowly. Like, maybe I don't text the first one to text. I don't get to get the get-togethers. Maybe knowing this is going to be an uncomfortable setting and I can't be there. I'm busy. I have noticed because I travel so much and I'm a career woman, it's a nice excuse. Because people are like, oh, we haven't seen you in a long time. Where have you been? You're always working. I'm like, I know. I'm always working. But that's been a good – that's – being a career woman has helped.
Okay. So you're not saying – like you're not reading your list of grievances to this person.
No.
You're just
– unless they ask me. Uh-huh. Someone just asked me recently, where have you been? We haven't connected. And I said, I felt like you're very selfish with my time. I was really honest mm-hmm. with this person. And she's like, I apologize. I didn't know I was doing that to you. Can we rekindle? And we did rekindle.
Wow.
But I had to tell. If you ask me that, if you ask me for your my opinion, I will give it to you. But I don't always give it to you unless you ask okay. in the relationship audit piece. Because I'm not there to intentionally hurt someone either. So right. That's not fair. We'll slowly like.
Are you open to people LinkedIning you privately to ask questions about this process? Because yes. I do think that you might yes. get a lot of questions.
I'm not open to it, yeah. It's not like I profoundly woke up one day. This is a lot of work.
Right.
And maybe I'll have to call Carrie Preston because I had to call her about something recently. I was like, I got to talk to you. It's a Sunday. I have a relationship thing. And she talked me through it. Yeah.
Having a coach is quite nice.
It does, yeah. We're not the experts all the time.
So now we're going to go back to where we started this conversation. Before we asked you about your boots, I asked you if we're going to talk about what you're up to these days. So let's start with your work today or what you're planning on pursuing.
Yeah, so I have had a great time reflecting on sort of what's important to me. And, you know, and nothing's changed, right? Since I was a little girl, it's beauty and wellness. Mm-hmm. And so I've spent a lot of time consulting a lot of different companies that are innovating in this space. Wellness is just, we're in the first inning. And the places it's going to go is extraordinary. I've actually been consulting. I'm about to join the board at this amazing mineral hot springs company. Mm. Really amazing. It's called World Springs. We have three locations, one outside of Vail, one in Plano, and one opening Memorial Day weekend in Zion.
Wow.
But these are just incredibly, you know, curative mineral hot springs that really allow you to recover to achieve the stress you're looking for, to better connect, and actually to sleep better. You know, it's pretty basic, basic wellness, but that is so profound and so important. So that's been super electrifying.
So these are natural hot springs.
Yeah, they're natural hot springs. Three locations, more to come, mm-hmm. But super, super fun. But I am super excited about where the world of wellness is going and where it converges with beauty and with healthcare. And right, everyone reads the same trends. We're all reading it. I live it. This is how I live my life. So I'm super excited about the possibilities in the future, especially when you think about, you know, medical aesthetics, where that shows mm-hmm. up. I mean, consumers don't look at them as different things. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is how I get better. This is how I be the best that I can be. And I'm so excited that like almost the playing field's been leveled because they're like, I can get it all. But it's about the curation of it and really the people behind what they're giving, right? There's a lot of like, what was I reading the other today about just all the, you know, the supplements, the TikTok supplements, right? TikTok wellness supplements. You have to really think about sort of where you're buying the things that are supposed to make yes. you feel better, right? And how you're consuming that information, that, you know, your wellness is much about sort of your mental fitness. And, you know, I'm really always on the road of efficacy. What can you do to actually get those achievable results? I believe that those results are super achievable. I am aging myself. I want to age super sexy, beautifully. I really mean it, right? And I want to get better with age, and I will. Because the world has changed, is changing so dramatically as it relates to beauty and wellness. So it excites me greatly.
Well, you look great. So
go on.
Everyone can't see her, but she's fabulous.
So you gave us some hard facts about being on the board of that company, but are we going to see you leading like in the longevity space, a company sometime
we'll
soon?
See.
Okay.
We'll see.
You'll report back?
I'll report back okay. for sure.
So Dawn, tell us what you're working on now.
So I just went to Borghese. For those of you that do not know, it's a 60-year-old Italian legacy skincare brand founded by, talk about game changer, Princess Marcella Borghese founded the company in 1957. This is before, first of all, she's royal family, so she didn't need to do this. I had to be blessed by the Pope. And they started asking me to come over for several months. It was a long process. I'm in a big step for me, a scary step to leave a company that I love, felt familiar with. But I was given the opportunity to redesign the Italian villa and put Borghese on its renaissance. And it had been quiet for about 10 to 15 years. You know, some people will say, oh, I know Borghese. Where have you been? I said the same thing. Like, where have they been? So we have rebuilt the whole team almost. We have 7 people still from the original team. One's been there over 30 years, someone 26 years and 21 years, but everyone else is new. So in the last 9 months, not only are we in this renaissance of the brand and brand awareness and growth, but we have built a whole new team. And it's been, you know, to build a company from scratch and build your own house is an honor that some people don't get in a lifetime. But then fast forward to now be able to remodel an Italian villa, I couldn't say no. So this is 2 opportunities in my career I'm so grateful for. And it's really a good journey. I was with someone last night and she's like, you look happy. I'm in a good place. We have a great team and a great brand, and the story is so amazing. And I really, like you, I don't just go anywhere. Like, if I don't like the product, I can't fake it. Obviously, I cannot fake it. It's so special, and it deserves so much respect. So here we are.
I love it. Well, yeah. Now it's time for us to move on to our gameplay.
Okay.
And after that, we'll be found questions. So you mentioned, like, you both are foodies.
Yes.
Like, major foodies. We are. Totally up your alley. It's going to be a this or that of restaurant options. So a food tour. Okay. So if we're taking you on a food tour and you're going to, we'll see if you're aligned, right? Okay. If you have matchy
I would
taste
not be
not.
Surprised if we weren't. We'll see.
So we're going to play a restaurant food tour game. So I'm going to give you 2 scenarios and you're going to pick where you choose to go. Okay. So I think these are all in New York. So your first option, first night out together, you can go to SEA, which is a Southeast Asian restaurant in Koreatown. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to El Cedro, which is in Brooklyn. It's a Lebanese-Mexican. And maybe there you try the sumac chicken quesadilla. So where are you heading?
You go first.
Oh, God. Both.
I know. Those are like
my... I think I do see. I love Koreatown.
Me too. Okay. I absolutely love Korean food. I love kimchi. I can eat it every day.
Same. And yep. I do.
We're making kimchi this weekend. Oh, I'm going to mail some to you. I'm bringing it to you. You know, my husband makes kimchi. My mother's best friend was Korean. I'm giving it to you when it's done fermenting.
Oh, my God.
I'll message it to your office. Okay. Sorry.
And my dog's name is Kimchi.
No.
Okay. You're getting a jar. It takes about 6 months. So we'll see you in June.
She's a Bernedoodle. Yeah. She's amazing. Okay. The next date night, you can go to Smithereens. It's a New England-inspired restaurant. And you can have the cocktail called the Ben Affleck while you're there, which is bourbon, honey nut squash, and coffee. That's not real. That's gross. Okay. Or you can go to Hellbender, which is a Mexican-American concept in Ridgewood, and you would try the Bronzino while you're there. So it's New England-inspired restaurant who has a nod to Ben Affleck with booze, but I'm pretty sure he's sober, and Hellbender, Mexican-American.
I'm definitely Mexican-American. Yeah. Bronzino's delicious.
Yeah, okay. I love Bronzino.
Okay, next date night, it's Parcel, which is in Greenwich Village. It's a wine bar. There you might try the herbed tomatoes with stracciatella. Or Gus and Marty's, a new Greek spot in Williamsburg, and you will try the fire-roasted Lavrocki.
Probably Greenwich Village. I agree. I'm
100%.
Okay, so you're going to go to the wine bar.
Yes.
Okay, last date night. So we have like 4 date nights here. You can go to Gage and Tallner. This is in Brooklyn. Old New York throwback, and you can try the Seafood Tower. Or you can go Gramercy Tavern in Flatiron, American Classic, 5-course tasty menu.
I think I would do the first one. I mean, I've been to Gramercy, so it's like, okay, been there, done that. I want to try something new.
I think I don't mean to be copy, but I would, copy paste.
We've been there, how many times in our career have we been there?
This is why restaurants only can like exist for 7 years, right? Because you always want something new.
Totally.
Okay, we're almost at time. We have 5 minutes left, so we're going to get to some fan questions. This is a question from the audience. Dawn, you have a podcast too.
I do have a podcast.
Tell us about it.
It's going live soon. So I have 2 podcasts, the M word and the C word.
What are the words?
Mm-hmm.
What are the words?
So the M word is, we filmed 3 of the 5 series. We're going to go live. The M word is, first of all, I'm obsessed with people. Like, I love people. I love the energy. And it's, I'm really interested in women before they became a mother, which the M is mother. I think when you become a mother, you're put in this society bucket here that that's what you are. And it's interesting what women have done before they became a mother and as they continue that journey. So that's the first one. And the new one is called the C word, which is also fun. Not part of Maria's world. but it's actually change makers in residence. So I interview change makers that are doing great things that may not get the respect they deserve. It's not just for women, but I'm really trying to push women. And one of them is a CEO of a company that we'll be working with soon for Fashion Week. There's a couple other ones, and that series will come out a little bit later. I'm not good at editing, so I need some support, but yeah.
So this is a one-woman show.
Yeah, it's just a passion project. Mm-hmm. I really want to understand why people do what they do and what they're great at and highlight them for their successes.
Okay, Vimla, this is your question and is so tailored to you. What personal activities or hobbies in your everyday have that positive impact on the professional you, how you show up?
Two things. First is exercise. It really is my meditation. Mm-hmm. It is my fuel. I love all forms of exercise, but I really love Pilates. And I have a Pilates instructor. Her name is Vilma. I'm Vilma. I know. You can't make it up. My name is Vilma Elizabeth Gupta, and her name is Vilma Liz. And
oh,
she's
my God.
Got, she used to be my Pilates instructor when I was a CMO at Equinox, and I helped her build her digital platform. It's the VB Method, and it's extraordinary. And she has just this group of incredible instructors. It's so easy to do. And that's what I love about it. I can do it anywhere, and it brings me so much joy and so much connection to my body and to my mind. And I absolutely love it.
So like we dove into the process of evolving relationships. Can we go a little bit deeper into this? Because people really want to know, like, okay, how many days a week are you doing this?
Okay.
Like, what time of day are you doing it?
All the times of day, whenever I can. And that's what I love about it. If it's 15 minutes or 30 minutes, if I have the luxury of doing an hour, I'll do it. So it's about whatever time is available to me. I probably do it about 5 times a week.
The Pilates.
Mm-hmm. And I'll do other things. I love to swim. Mm-hmm. I love to run. I love to lift weights. And, you know, I love to jump rope. I really value movement. And obviously I love it just because it's great for my health and it's great aesthetically, you know, for things that interest me. But it really is incredible for my mind. It is the only time when I can calm my mind and truly think. So I really, while it's exercise and it feels gluttonous and it's, you know, it really is working time for me because I can really sift through things more clearly.
As I'm evolving, we called it earlier, my changing body, I have like a lot of connective tissue. They call it sticky connective tissue. So I guess as the hormones change in our body, the hormones used to like create lubrication in our connective tissue. And now mine is getting sticky.
Your synovial fluid.
Thank you. So what I've realized is the more frequently I do exercise, the better it is, right? I used to look at this and be like, oh no, my knees hurt. I won't work out today. And then I it took me a long time to get here and realized, wait, if I do work out every day, they'll be less sticky. So I imagine you're getting a lot of benefits beyond the normal, you know, endorphins and things from working out like this every
day.
Yeah,
absolutely. And at my age and with an 8 and 9 year old, I'm so obsessed with mobility, right? I really am thinking 10, 20 years from now, am I going to be able to move, or even tomorrow, am I going to be able to move the way I'm going to need to move? And so it's interesting. What I'm most focused on right now is strength, but it's strength in mobility.
Okay, last question, and you can get specific because I want to get more detail about where you're heading because it's going to help me. What is the trend that you're keeping your eyes on?
For beauty or in general?
You get to choose.
I think for beauty, longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really obsessed with science and the intersection between science and wellness. This is why I think you and I, like, we love each other this way. There is a profound scientific innovation and research happening around longevity and your telomeres and telomere support. Mm-hmm. Skin is the largest organ in the body. And I think sometimes people look at beauty like, oh, you're so superficial. I'm like, excuse me, your skin is the largest organ in your body. Like, if it's not healthy, you're not healthy. So let's take a beat and understand, like, that we need healthy skin. And you need it to survive. And I think wellness dramatically affects skin. I mean, there's a reason why we see more psoriasis and eczema and autoimmune disorders and things. And you're an expert, so you could talk more about it. But I'm obsessed with longevity and the intersection.
Yeah, I mean, copy paste, like, for sure. Yeah. That's exactly how I feel. And I think, you know, the question I always ask myself and I ask other people is, like, you can be well, but are you really well, right? What does really well mean?
Yeah.
And I truly feel, and I get excited just saying this, is that you can be really well. It's not just about doing this thing and that thing to, like, you know, what does really well look like? Why don't we challenge ourselves to just get better? Why does the timeline have to be in reverse? And I'm obsessed with that. Mm-hmm. I am going to achieve it. And so I'm excited about like-minded brands and industries that, you know, will not just except okay. Mm-hmm. It really is about living really well.
Do you think wellness is different for everyone? Like, really well, like, if I'm really well, it's different for everyone?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there was an article.
It's okay. I was going to close this out, but let's
I told you this was going to happen. We already told you.
There was a great article, I think, at this past Sunday in the New York Times about, like, why, you know, why have Americans made wellness so difficult? Why is it so hard? Yeah. When wellness used to be, you know, back in the day, was wellness, which is taking a walk with your friends.
Yeah. It feels selfish. Society makes you feel selfish taking the time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's arduous. It's selfish. It can be brutal. And it's just, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Like, when did wellness become so exhausting?
Yeah.
And to your point, though, being really well for someone might be having just the best connections. Like, just having the space for their girlfriends might make you really well. But you have to define it for yourself. But whatever it is, what I feel is that whatever it is that makes you well, just get really well, because you should be able to achieve that.
Love it.
I love that thought. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
So
much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.